Jesus lament over Jerusalem. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. This beautiful image of God's yearning love for a people who again and again and again choose violence and reject God's love. It's been a really hard week. On Friday, once again, the story of a shooter. And out of fear and hatred toward people who are different, slaughtered 50 Muslims at prayer in two mosques. And the Jews, you know, if we think back, it's just this story over and over again. The Jews who were killed in the Tree of Life synagogue in Philadelphia. The Christians who were killed at Mother Emmanuel African and Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston. Over and over and over again. God's people killed at prayer. And people who choose the path of violence and reject God's love. Where's God in all of this? How do we make sense of it? God's yearning love. You know, I'm struck by the fact that Muslims and the Jews and the Christians bound together in this experience of being rejected and hated by others. We all trace our roots back to Abraham. We are all children of Abraham. And I find myself thinking about Abraham today. Abraham, standing there surrounded by dead animals, surrounded by blood and death, chasing away birds of prey, and experiencing a deep and terrifying darkness. Where is God for him in that moment? You know, it's helpful to have a little background on Abraham. This scene that we have today is one step in his long journey with God. He's already demonstrated a lot of trust in God. He's left Ur, he's left Haran, I mean his homeland, his extended family, he's left them all to come to this new place. Because God said, go, and I'm going to show you where you're going once you're on the way. And several chapters before, God has already promised to give him many descendants, of whom? Muslims and Jews and the Christians, the fulfillment of that promise, though he does not know it. And to bless him, and to make him a great nation. But there's a part of this that's overlooked often in the telling of this story. He's called to be a blessing. He and his descendants are called to be a blessing to all the peoples of the earth. He's not just chosen for himself. He's chosen with a very long-term purpose of being a blessing to others. And now, well into his journey, God calls him, comes to him, and tells him not to be afraid, that God will be his shield. But all that Abraham can think about is that he doesn't have any children to inherit the promises that God has made. What good are all these promises? I don't have a child. So God promised And Abraham believes God's promise. And then God says, and I'm going to give you the land too. The same Abraham who has just accepted God's promise about children now says, how will I know? How will I know? Faith and doubt all mixed together. You know, show me God. How can I know? How will I know that I'm to possess this land? And what God gives him in response is not an immediate answer. What God gives him doesn't look like an answer at first. It says, I've got some orders for you. Cut up a bunch of animals. Lay them up, side by side. So it makes a path. Wait. And there we have Abraham waiting and waiting, surrounded by dead bodies, chasing away the vultures. And then the deep and terrifying darkness descends. It's an amazing scene. He's all alone. And there's the darkness. And I think how often it is true for us that between God's promises and their fulfillment lies a deep and terrifying darkness. It's a common human experience to feel ourselves surrounded by that darkness, that long period of waiting. And it seems like there's nothing but the dead and the vultures and the darkness. You know, in this week's news, it wasn't just the shootings. There was the bomb cyclone in Colorado and Kansas, and the devastating floods in Nebraska and Iowa. Have people heard about that? I mean, Nebraska's virtually immobilized and will be for a long time. And almost overlooked in the news on Friday was the worldwide protest by children saying, "What are you bequeathing us? An unlivable world?" And though the mosque shootings are horrifying and my heart breaks for them, the truth is that the climate issue is the bigger disaster. It's just not as visceral and immediate for most of us. And then we have the ongoing issue of children still separated from their parents, and increasingly the news that they have been assaulted by the very people who were supposed to be taking care of them. And amid all that global darkness, we struggle with our own nearer darkness as well, with illness, with addictions, with worry about the safety and well-being of the people we love, with depression and despair, and with death, which is our constant companion as human beings. As we pass through the most difficult times, the times when the world's brokenness or our own pain seem endless and hope seems impossibly remote, we may feel that we, like Abraham, have been waiting for decades to see the fulfillment of God's promises. We stand over carcasses and chase away the birds of prey, waiting and waiting for God to act. And even God may seem dark to us, absent when we need full presence. And the deep and terrifying darkness may seem like the only reality. And yet, like Abraham, we are met by the promises of God, even in the darkness. With the psalmist, we cry out, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? I believe that I shall see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." Wait for me. Be strong. And let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. You know, not to Abraham, not to the psalmist, not to us, does God promise that we will escape from the evil and pain and brokenness of the world. That is not God's promise. God does not guarantee us a life without pain or suffering. But God promises to be the one whose presence is our shield and our light and our salvation, even in the darkness through which we travel. God does not promise to spare us, but God promises to be with us. When my younger son was little, I used to read to him. It was one of our most important rituals. When he was little, I read the children's stories, and as we got older, we would read aloud books together. And one of his favorites, which remains a favorite to this day, is from the Chronicles of Narnia. It's The Horse and His Boy. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's the story of Shasta, who's a Narnian, though he doesn't know it. And he's living in a foreign land and being raised by a man who he thinks is his father, but who's very abusive to him. And it's the story of his escape from that situation and his long journey toward the neighbor land to Narnia. And in this particular scene that I'm thinking of today, Shasta has been traveling with some companions, but he's been left behind. He doesn't know where they are, and he's walking in the darkness along a road in the mountains. And he begins to realize that there is something walking beside him in the dark. Now, he's just a little boy, and he's all alone in the dark in the mountains, and there's something there, and he can hear it breathing. And he can tell that it is huge, but he can't see it. And finally, torn between the fear of what it may be and the horror of not knowing what it is, he says, "Who are you?" And so begins a conversation that leads to his sharing with this terrifying and still unseen presence, his life story, which includes a number of close escapes from what he describes as numerous lions. But the voice replies, "There was only one, but he was swift of foot." "How do you know?" Shasta asks. "I was the lion." And as Shasta gaped with open mouth and said nothing, the voice continued, "I was the lion who forced you to join with Erebus. I was the cat who comforted you among the houses of the dead. I was the lion who drove the jackals from you while you slept. I was the lion who gave the horses the new strength of fear for the last mile, so that you should reach King Loon in time. And I was the lion you do not remember, who pushed the boat in which you lay, a child near death, so that it came to shore where a man sat wakeful at midnight to receive you. When Shasta asks in fear and awe, "Who are you?" the voice replies, "Myself." And the reader knows, though Shasta does not, that he has just encountered Aslan, the ruler above all rulers, the Christ figure of the Narnia books. While Shasta had felt throughout his young life that he was alone and surrounded by terror and danger, he had, in fact, been accompanied throughout by the protective and guiding presence of love. Much of the time, he did not see it. He did not know it. But it was not any less real for that. It was only afterwards that he recognized it. Shasta's experience is like Abraham's. God comes to him not just in the daylight, not just in the times when all is right, but in fact, in the deep and terrifying darkness. There in fire and smoke, passing between the dead bodies, is God. And God comes to him to make a covenant with him, to use an ancient form, an ancient human form, to bind God's self in promise to Abraham. I am here. I will be here. I am your shield. When we trust God's promises and continue to seek God's face in prayer in spite of what we feel at a given moment, we come to discover that God has been with us, even in the darkest passages. Even when we have a palpable sense of God's absence, even then. But the promises of God are more than a comfort in the darkness. They serve as a critique of the present. It is a challenge to live into God's future. Paul tells us in Philippians that our citizenship is in heaven, but that does not mean that the promises of God are a passport to escape from the present into a blissful future. Instead, we're called to live by heaven's purposes in the here and now, to live out our citizenship so that God's reign grows among us here, in the midst of this present darkness. Like Abraham, we are called to be a blessing to others. Jesus challenges us to stop wandering around in the darkness as if we had no vision and no guide. Like the lion who guided Shasta, he himself walks beside us, nudging us when we venture too close to the precipice, offering the warmth of his presence when the road grows fearful and dark, but also demanding more from us than we feel capable of doing. He commands us to venture farther, to keep walking when we want to sit down. He denies us the easy roads that promise the satisfaction of our desires. Instead, he commands us to walk the narrow way that leads to the cross, and to enter through the narrow door, even though it will cost us our lives. It is, after all, the road that he marks. He calls us to love when we do not feel like loving, to reach out our hands when we would rather turn our backs, and to face the suffering from which we would rather run. It is not an easy path, but it is Christ's path, and it leads through death to life. That is our most fundamental truth. And when we are in darkness, when we are surrounded by suffering and death, and we say, "Where is God in all this?" God is with us. God is in us. And God asks to work through us, to be that presence of love for others. Did you happen to see the picture of the man standing outside the mosque with the homemade sign this week? On the sign, it said, "You are my friend, and I will keep watch while you pray." You know, we could just curl up in fear. We could be convinced that God is nowhere in all of this. There is God. We are called, in the midst of fear, in the midst of darkness, to be the voice of love. "You are my friend. I will keep watch while you pray." To be the presence of God for each other in the darkness. For people whom the world rejects. For our neighbors, for others in this community, to know, to trust,